And our next and last speaker is? And our next and last speaker is Sarah Schwartz from the University of Rhode Island.
All right. Hi. So I am Sarah Schweig. I'm going to be presenting on growing amaranth in New England. My advisor, Dr. Rebecca Brown, who's here, worked with me on all the various projects I'm going to touch on throughout this. So in the title here, this is not a taste of my home, a little project background. This started as producer-driven research. Our cooperative extension was working with a collective of growers in Providence, Rhode Island, mainly Heather Fobert and Andrew Radin, who are shown here. And these growers were growing their native crops in urban plots, and they were working with our extension to talk about season extension and efficient use of resources, which is especially important for them because most of the crops they were trying to grow are tropical and subtropical in origin. So the season extension is important in the temperate climate. And efficient use of resources is important to everyone, but especially in the urban setting. They're on metered water, for example. They have very limited space. So of the many crops that they were working on, I chose to focus on amaranth. This mostly took place last summer, and this is part of my thesis work. So amaranth does refer to the whole genus Amaranthus typically. We're focusing on vegetable amaranth, just meaning that it's eaten, grown and eaten for its leaves. So the entire genus is C4 photosynthesizers. They have a really wide global spread and significance due largely in part to its reputation as being a resilient, stress-tolerant plant in combination with a high nutritional content. So it's an important crop in a lot of places. And for other growers, not just these growers we were working with directly, we think it is a good opportunity as an ethnic crop because it has such wide significance. So as far as marketing, the idea is that you're casting a wide net because this is grown and eaten traditionally on continents across the world. And again, its reputation as resilient and stress tolerant is good for our predominantly small, diversified farms that want to mitigate their on-farm risk with crops like this as well. So to address this, I worked on two trials in 2016, variety trials, and the idea was just to assess which vegetable amaranth varieties are most suited for production in the northeastern temperate climate. These varieties are generally not the products of intensive breeding efforts, so they're kind of underdeveloped and definitely understudied in temperate climates for sure. And then we also did a production systems comparison. Given the needs of those growers they were working with, efficient use of resources and season extension, we figured that plastic culture could probably be of benefit to their production. So I'll start with the variety trials. We had 10 varieties, most of which were Amaranthus tricolor, which is the most common and tend to be the most developed varieties of vegetable amaranth. Amaranthus viridis is eaten in mostly Africa and the Caribbean, and Amaranthus hybridus, this was actually an heirloom variety, and the seeds were given to us by the African Alliance growers. So we used greenhouse-started seedlings and plasticulture management basically just to take into account the realities of growers in our regions, especially for heat-loving crops. Because of our short growing season, these are really common strategies. So we had 10 plants of each variety in a randomized complete block design. We harvested based on signs of flowering, so the calendar days varied here and there. We looked at yields, yield stability, and then leaf to stem ratio. This was all repeated 7 times during the 2016 growing season, but our last planting was frost damaged before harvest, so from here on out, I'll just be talking about 6 plantings. So when we look at yield, what I want to point out here is mainly that in the first planting, you see both more variety, more variability within the varieties, that's represented by the error bars, which are plus and minus 1 standard error, and between the varieties, so a greater treatment effect of variety on yield. Then in plantings 2 through 5, which is midsummer, we see overall higher yields and much less variability. So then planting 6, we've got basically a mirror of planting 1. So now we're getting into the late season, and it kind of mirrors the early season. We've got more variability and many of those same varieties that did well in the early season are doing well in the late season. So this can kind of be better understood by looking at yield stability. So we use CV since we've got yield in the denominator of the equation, right, and variance in the numerator. We're going to basically ding any varieties that have really high yield potential but are not going to perform in certain environments such as the early or late season. And also if we've got low yielding varieties that are just consistently low, we maybe are not as interested in those as either. So in this scenario, up in the top left quadrant here, those are going to be our most desirable varieties. They've got high yield, which is on the y-axis, and low CV, which is on the x-axis. So in the bottom right quadrant, we're probably not interested in those varieties because they've got high CV as well as low yield. However, in the bottom left quadrant, those should not all necessarily be eliminated from the running. So direct comparison of yields is not the most appropriate with all of these varieties because we've got such a range of habits. So for example, if we look here, this variety white leaf, that's actually a dwarf variety. So we're not surprised that it has lower yields than many of the other varieties, but it has a very low CV, which means it was highly consistent. This can further qualify these results in our leaf to stem ratio. Since we're growing this as a leafy vegetable, the idea is that the more leaves, the better. And we see again this white leaf in the top right. So not only was it consistent, it has a very good leaf to stem ratio. And the highlighted varieties were not at all affected by planting date for their leaf to stem ratio, but in general, leaf to stem ratio seemed to be pretty genetic and was pretty consistent for all the varieties. So just to visualize the importance of some of these descriptive and stability variables, so going across the top here, you see that white leaf plant, that's the dwarf variety. So this is the same plant. I'm zooming in here as I go through the process of separating the leaves and petioles from the stems. So to see what a very high leaf to stem ratio looks like, we've got just about nothing left once we're separated there. And then compare that to the bottom right corner here, red callaloo, one of our most stemmy varieties. You can see clearly that there's a lot less leaves, and also this plant tends to be around 3 feet tall, whereas the white leaf plant, we're talking maybe a foot, maybe a foot and a half. And down in the bottom left, Asia red, that was the one in the bottom right quadrant. I said probably is not desirable. These are two plants harvested at the same time. And so essentially after, let's say, 30 calendar days, if you're a grower, you do not want to see this much variability within a plot. And also the plant on the right is so small, it's really just not worth much to you as a grower. So if we're seeing this much variability, we're less interested in those varieties. So onto the production systems, we compared 4 systems, bare soil for control, black plastic mulch, low tunnels with black plastic mulch for maximized heat, and then high tunnels, which we ventilated for tomato production. We kind of acknowledged that amaranth monoculture is not going to be the most profitable use of these structures, so we wanted to look at it as an addition to existing high tunnel production. These all used drip irrigation, another common plastic culture technique. And we looked at just 2 varieties this time, and we harvested based on calendar days. So to see how these treatments affected yield after a certain number of days. And this was repeated 3 times over the 2016 growing season, and we looked at the same response variables, yield, leaf to stem ratio, and the microclimate effects. So the yield results here, very clear pattern. You'll notice the high tunnel in dark blue is missing from the second figure there because it was severely damaged by woodchucks, and we were left with just about nothing, so we didn't include that in there. We've got the consistent pattern with low tunnels yielding the most, followed by black plastic, high tunnels when present, and then bare soil. And the magnitude of the effect just decreases as the season goes on or as ambient temperatures increase. As far as significance goes, all pairwise comparisons were significant in the first and second planting, and then in the third planting we look like this. So the low tunnel and the black plastic were not statistically distinguishable, nor were the high tunnel and the bare soil plots. So to wrap this up, both variety selection and our production system selection matter less in the midsummer months. So amaranth did seem to be a resilient, potentially low input option for farmers, but if we want to look at having a long season for it too, we chose our top performing varieties based on the varieties that performed well also in the kind of shoulder seasons, the early and late seasons. Our limitations for the variety trials were after we gathered all these descriptive measures, we realized that these varieties are so different from one another. So the standardized production is simply not what you would do if you were growing it. And as far as the production system goes, with plasticulture, there is so much room for variation. It really depends on your target production area, your markets, what supplies you already have. But essentially, plasticulture is clearly beneficial. Maximized heat leads to maximized yield. So the only option we thought would probably is not ideal for amaranth is high tunnels, because they represent the greatest initial investment and were the most similar in results to the bare soil, which is the least initial investment. And again, after looking at the after completing the variety trials, we also think this cost-benefit analysis, which will certainly vary from farm to farm, but we really think it will vary quite a bit variety to variety. And again, also a limitation harvesting based on calendar days. In these photos, you see a plant from a bare soil plot and a plant from a black plastic mulch plot. So not even the highest yielding, but the second highest yielding compared to the lowest. And again, if you were a farmer, you simply would not have harvested this teeny tiny plant. So I'll talk just a little bit about addressing these limitations. This is some work we're doing this summer. So as far as targeted production strategies, Red Callaloo, you may remember, was one of our very stemmy varieties, and we knew pretty early on that repeat harvest could probably increase branching and leaf number. So we have not collected all the data from this summer, but we did do a little side experiment, and you can see pinched plants. We just pinched, like you would the top of basil, shown in red, and not pinched, shown in blue. And across the x-axis, weeks after transplant, at 4 weeks after transplant, not only did we have increased branches and leaves, but the not pinched were actually flowering, and the pinched flowering had been delayed. And we want to also work on more dynamic production protocols. So what we see here is the accumulation of heat units in the air, growing degree days, for our four production systems from last year. And rather than standardize our calendar days, what we are doing this summer, is we're standardizing our growing degree days. So then what we can provide farmers with is how long will each of these options take to, in comparison to one another, in comparison to ambient temperatures, for you to get the same yield results, which again, we kind of found were very closely linked to accumulation of heat units. I just want to say thanks to the folks that were involved in my thesis, our farm and extension people, and also Northeast SARE, which is funding the continuation of this work that is happening this summer. And that's it. Thanks. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I didn't think I had time to put it in the slide, but we also, speaking of how they look, are doing a study at farmers markets this summer, and we're actually basing preferences on the appearance because we think that that's not only related to marketing, but, you know, and people will perceive to taste. But, yeah, so the difference is In my opinion, I've eaten them all, mainly in the texture. I would say the very deep red ones, which are some of the stemmier ones, also maybe get towards bitter, whereas those white leaf are very tender, but also not as much flavor. And on the whole, the kind of middle line is very similar to spinach, but a little kind of nuttier. They do. And it's typically, like when you see it sold at the markets, you'll have, a little bunches, bit of stem, bit of leaf. So you, depending on the variety, you can cut at the central stem and let the axilla grow out, but either way, they usually harvest and just cut and come again. Correct. And this one, so the other way it's commonly sold, I haven't seen it this way in the States, but it's just to pull it up by the roots. So we, for these studies, cut right above the soil surface to not include roots, but to get close enough. And then this current summer, we're doing repeat harvest.